Hey everybody, welcome to another episode of Naturopathic Futures. I am super excited today to introduce you all and talk to the incredible Rebecca Hughes. I had the honor of seeing Rebecca speak at the NHAA one year, and I got to deep dive with her this year as she steps into this really different space that she's been holding, being an experienced practitioner in so many different parts of the profession. And now bringing it into the world of helping other pracs, especially in a really specific niche that I can't stand. And that's what I love about our profession. There are people that just get one thing or one way of doing stuff, and there are others of us that are built for something else. So skin has always been something that has scared me. I've always had the long-term kind of processes with clients. So I love having a practitioner who I can just refer all my clients to for skin. But I am super excited to talk to you today, Rebecca. Welcome.
Thank you. I'm super excited to be here too. Thanks for that
So
generous introduction.
we are both alumni of Southern Cross University, I found out.
We are.
Yeah, and it was
I
a
loved
beautiful
my degree.
it was such a beautiful place to study. How did you get into naturopathy in the first place?
You know what? People have asked me that question a lot, and I used to try and retrospectively manufacture some reasonable argument as to why it happened. And I think there's a lot of influences. My dad was pretty alternative, but as like a lot of young people, you reject everything that your parents want to do. And I think it's just, I went away traveling and I just explored a lot about the world and myself. And I think I just honed my values really of, and so in a way, natural medicine just really called to me.
Yeah, it's philosophical, right? We've got our first principles, and it's what we build everything on. And I don't think a lot of healing modalities can actually say that, right? Yeah.
Yeah.
And so you got into Southern Cross and you loved your degree as much as I did. What were some of the influences that you went, okay, I'm actually going to come out and be a clinician, or am I going to come out and help with regulatory affairs, which is what you did for a little while, which is kind of crazy for my brain. I'm going to help people write textbooks, which was part of your journey. And you've lectured on international stages for the NHAA and been part of the association. So there's so many different things. When you were finishing up at SCU, you're finishing up your degree, what was it that you thought, yeah, I'm going to do that?
I had no idea that I was going to do all of that. When I graduated, immediately I went straight into clinical practice in Lismore, and I was doing over-the-counter traditional herbal prescribing as well as long consults. I also started assisting in the anatomy and physiology labs at SCU, and I was doing a little bit of that when I first graduated. And then actually one of my lecturers came to me and said, "Hey, I saw this job advertised at the TGA and I reckon you'd be really good at it. Why don't you apply?" And that was really what it was. I applied and I went for an interview and I thought, wow, I thought I'd completely bombed it. And then they offered me a job and I ended up in Canberra and it was completely unplanned.
Wow.
And it was very interesting because I had no idea how that whole side of life works, like just governance in general, but also the regulation of the medicines that we use. And it's extremely insightful to be on, it's not really the other side, it's just another aspect of our industry. And I think that regulation is misunderstood largely by naturopaths and probably by a lot of health professionals. It's a little bit of a mystery box, but I found
Yeah,
it
it
really
feels like the
educational.
Wizard of Oz, and you got to see behind the curtain, right? What did you love about it? What was your biggest takeaway?
My love about it was that I can see that Australia really does have probably one of the best regulatory systems in Australia, and the TGA does prioritise safety. And as much as a lot of people may not agree with that, I think when you're looking at medicines that people can self-select from even a supermarket shelf, that's a really important priority. And it And that's what I really liked about it. I also liked that I got exposed to different aspects of science in that, in terms of there's labs at the TGA and they're constantly running different kinds of programs to do validity studies, or they might be looking at contamination studies. And then a little later on, I was also involved with the scheduling framework and the reworking of the scheduling framework. So, yeah, I had a lot of different roles and lessons. And then that kind of leapfrogged me to the NH and MRC because I wanted to get some experience in guideline development. So I did that as well, obviously not on a naturopathic guideline, it was on a mental health guideline. So I learned the methodology for guideline development, clinical practice guideline development.
Wow. Again, these different structures and ways of thinking about things that we aren't necessarily taught, but having an exposure to that just really gives you an understanding of what's happening behind the scenes, like you said. Yeah, wow. And then in clinical practice, in say your first decade, because it's been 2 decades that you've been in practice plus, in that first decade, a lot of us are like, oh, I'm going to be a general practitioner. Oh, I'm going to do whatever. What happened for you? What did it look like for you?
I did it. I felt like I did a bit of everything. So I did some clinical practice. Then I was working at the TGA. While I had a full-time job, I also decided I didn't want to lose my clinical skills. So I took on a part-time job as well, overseeing the third-year students in the TAFE program at Canberra TAFE. Sorry, that's not the right name for it. But yeah, there was a naturopathic program there, like an advanced diploma program. So I was doing clinical supervision just so that I could stay current with what was going on in the world of clinic and also education. And then when I went to Melbourne for the NH and MRC, because that the role was actually there, I also continued to do a little bit of work with Endeavour College. I did depart from the public service then as well. And so then I went back into clinical practice and doing clinical supervision and teaching mostly fourth year students at Endeavour. And then I guess, yeah, in between time, yeah, I was asked to write to update some chapters for the Herbs and Natural Supplements textbook. And I reviewed some chapters as well for other textbooks.
Amazing. Yeah,
It's like a lot when I say it all like that.
yes,
I forget all the things that I've done.
it is. And we often do, especially if we've been in practice for a while, and we've all gotten into this to help people, but then it takes us in all of these different places and spaces. But your brain works in both the clinical aspect of being able to sit and nut out an incredible case and work with the person that's in front of us. And you joined the profession because of the philosophy base that you had from your global travels. And then the other part of your brain is so beautifully analytical, and you're able to edit, set up guidelines, work within the structures, those formal structures, at the same time as using these really incredible clinical case-taking skills. It's a really great combination to have as a clinician that's then had a wider perspective out on our profession and our industry. It's really cool.
Thanks. Yeah, I've had a varied career. I feel very grateful for that.
And when you were teaching and when you were working with the fourth year students, what did you love about that? What did you love about being part of the kind of transition year for a lot of clinicians?
I really enjoyed helping them piece everything together. There was a particular unit that ran alongside clinic. Clinic can get a bit crazy. Fourth year clinic can get pretty busy. But I really enjoyed this parallel unit where we deal with case studies, and every single week is a new case study, and it's just the entire class putting the entire case study together. And it's just so rewarding to see students consolidate, integrate, apply everything that they've been working so hard for over those previous years. And I really enjoy that kind of work because it's very dynamic, it's problem solving, it's thinking outside the box, it's taking in all the considerations and mapping it out. I really love it. I even do it for my patients now. I always do a mind map for my patients, and so that I can educate them, because I figure big one of the biggest parts that we do as naturopaths is educate our patients.
Docere, sorry, I had a tech issue there. Docere is that amazing principle that we have, doctor as teacher, and it keeps on going, doesn't it? It doesn't really matter whether you have one client in front of you or you have a room full of fourth-year students that are masterminding a particular case. It's still you in that role of being able to piece it all together and teach that person about their cells and their self. When you are describing creating mind maps for your clients, it reminds me of when we've spoken on this podcast to Carla Wren, who did the functional medicine training. And it was a real reflection of what we studied at Southern Cross. And I know that you've done the certification in functional medicine and you've done Southern Cross. The way in which we pulled apart cases, I really feel like there was so much comprehension to that, and I can see that in your work, in your mentoring now, that it's such a unique skill to have to be able to pull apart a case piece by piece and then reflect on the differentials, reflect on the timeline, and then reflect on and reflect it back for somebody so that they can learn through a mind map. How has those extra trainings come into what you do now as a mentor?
Do you know a little secret? I got rid of all of my textbooks and all of my files and everything, but the one thing I still kept was that final unit that we did in fourth year where you go through each case from beginning to end. Do you remember that?
Yeah, I do.
I still got the folder because I loved that unit so much. How does it reflect in the way that I mentor? I think I have a really strong focus on differential diagnosis because I think it's the absolute foundation. It doesn't matter what you're treating, doesn't matter which area you specialize in, that really thinking broadly and laterally across all the diagnostic options is so critical. And it's also what people come to us for because often in the general medical model, they've only been seen for, as we know, limited amounts of time, and there's not been really a lot of consideration given to what are all the possible, not just diagnoses, but antecedents and aggravating factors and predisposing factors. What is all of that? And it really does need to be considered and mapped out and systematically ruled out. And I guess it's the systemization and the method of it that I really think is important, and I enjoy that work. And it's also then makes the rest of the treatment and the management much more straightforward. If you put that work in at the start and you're considering it all, then as you're going along as a practitioner, you're thinking from that place, thinking from what are all the possibilities. And as you receive more information, whether it be objective data or subjective data about that person, then you can start to rule things out or bring them back in as the case may be, because you may actually receive new information that has you alter your perspective and pivot the treatment.
Yeah, absolutely.
Skeleton is how I
It's a
think of it.
skeleton and the bones and the real tole causum, like going down to the root of it all and then pulling apart every other piece that might be in the way for the time being and then putting everything back on top, the muscles and then the skin on top and then making sure that the whole picture is fitting. So you do work in skin now.
I do.
I do not like skin. And
Not many people do.
because there's so many things. Like when we're talking about differential diagnosis, for instance, there's just every, oh my goodness. You could just get a Mosby's and all the photos in the Mosby's and just they all look the same. And oh my goodness. And then it just take forever because it's so complex underneath. What has drawn you to skin?
Again, I feel like a lot of skin patients came to me, but I didn't necessarily have a choice about it at the start. So that's what happened. But in my own health journey, I'd forgotten that I had dealt with a skin condition, and what I dealt with I got it later, like late onset, early 20s acne.
Oh, wow.
And And it was a really difficult time. And it's like when you don't also, you're still a kid at that point to a degree. And I didn't know. I just went to the doctor and went to the dermatologist and did all the things that they told me to do and took all the things. And it was a very long, drawn out process. And in all of that, of course, it's a critical time in your self-development around self-esteem, right? So it was brutal to be dealing with that at that time of my life. I think it's just brutal at any time, frankly, but I found it's pretty hard. So I think that I have a lot of compassion for people who are dealing with skin conditions because I've got as lived experience with it. And that it there's this psychology that goes along with it. And it was so funny. It was only a few years later that when I didn't have acne anymore, and I realized that every time I looked in the mirror, I was still relating to myself as someone who had acne. It was like a mindset that had become entrenched in me that I was still the person with acne, but there was no acne. Does that make sense? And I think a lot of people with skin conditions do get caught in that loop. So even if their condition is improving, because it hasn't disappeared yet, they are still in that mindset that everything is really bad and wrong, essentially.
And it's so literally in your face. It's, yeah, wow.
It's visible. There's a lot of masking and hiding out that goes on for these patients. And it really does limit their participation in life. So for some people, like really bad eczema means that they can't exercise because every time they exercise, they sweat and the sweat contains histamine and their symptoms get worse. Or they don't want to exercise because then they've got to expose parts of their body that they don't want other people to see. Similarly with psoriasis, there's a lot of shame around, especially plaque psoriasis, because it's so visible. So I think that's why I have a really strong passion around it, is not just that I'm not just solving a physiological problem. I'm also helping someone deal with something that's deeply psychological.
And to understand it to the level of lived experience is just so much more relevant and empathic to be able to come from that space rather than that other part of your brain, which is extraordinary as well. And again, merging the two of them, that compassionate listening, that compassionate hearing and reflection for the client, as well as by the sounds of it, you were really specific there around the structure and how you could actually nut the logic of it out and the differentials to match and then essentially merge the two is a profound way of helping.
Oh, yeah, differentials. I think that was the question that you asked me before, wasn't it? I don't think I got to that. Differentials come with practice, with skin conditions. It's all about practice. I highly recommend people who want to get into this area to have a really good dermatological atlas or to use online ones. So, plenty of online dermatological atlases and just great references that you can use. And particularly, it's useful to look at images of people with different pigments because
Of
a skin
course.
condition in someone who has darker skin, it doesn't look the same. So hyperpigmentation doesn't, it might look more pink in some people, purple in some people, and almost black in some people. So hyperpigmentation can look like scarring if the skin's really dark. So that's just one thing to consider. But yeah, unfortunately, there's visual diagnostics, and then there's also combining that with the timeline, the family history, as well as the pathology. You really need all of those together and to consider them so that you know what you're looking at. Because also, if it's a skin condition that's characterized by a lot of pruritus, there's generally going to be a lot of damage done to the skin area through scratching. So it may not be initially very obvious what you're looking at because the architecture has been damaged by through scratching. And sometimes the architecture gets damaged through different medicines as well.
Oh,
So,
of course.
yeah, so if there's been long-term cortisone treatment, the skin will start to thin, look shiny, things like that, which necessary skin eczema necessarily wouldn't look shiny, But if
Yeah.
there's been a lot of cortisone use over, we're talking decades, which is a real thing. Lots of people have been using cortisone for decades to manage their.
Cortisone and antibiotics, coming from a microbiome perspective, I just,
Yeah.
oh. Oh.
Yeah, so that's what I've actually been putting together some educational materials recently, and I'm really emphasizing the importance of considering all of those aspects. In particular, I think family history and medical journey give you a lot of information about what's going to be the likely diagnosis.
Fantastic. It's again comprehensive. When taken out of context, it's just another terrain on the surface. But when you are putting it in that context of what the skin has been through, what the DNA has been through, what all of the other surfaces of the body have been through, it really starts to tease it out the way that you were describing with differential diagnosis as the basis of that to make a structural and really good quality clinical decision from it. Yeah. And so what's coming for Rebecca and skin, because I know that you've been mentoring one-on-one, but it sounds like you are stepping into really focusing on being able to help so many more practitioners. I know that so many practitioners like me have a little challenge with skin, and we find wonderful referral partners for it, but there is such an opportunity to help so many people. I know that, like you said, the cortisone creams are one of the top 10 pharmaceuticals that are being prescribed on a daily basis. And that means all of these skin surfaces that are happening in the world at the moment that are being treated by it have the potential to have the concomitant natural health treatment that would come to the base and to the root of the problem. What's happening for you?
Yeah, I am. I guess it's an area that I'm really passionate about. I think there's a lot of people in who go see their GP and their dermatologist, and unfortunately, they're given the same treatment. This has been happening literally for decades, and really the only new drug to the party is Dupixent, which now is like using a biologic to solve an atopic dermatitis situation, which I personally think is a little heavy-handed.
Yeah.
I'm not completely opposed to it. I know there are some people who deal with like profoundly extreme allergies, and drugs like Dupixent are completely appropriate for those situations. Otherwise, they just wouldn't be able to live harmoniously in the world. But I think there's a lot more on the continuum that would respond to really thorough, solid naturopathic care. And it upsets me when naturopaths say to come to me and say, "Oh no, I don't want to treat skin conditions because they're too difficult." And it's, but what about all those people that need you?
Yeah.
What about all those people that need a choice and they really are desperate for an alternative, and they know that the cortisone isn't working for them. They know that they're damaging themselves. They're terrified of TSW, by the way. All of these people are really scared because they know that if they ever go off their steroidal medications, it's going to be chaotic. But they don't feel like they've got good options. And so I really am in the business of empowering practitioners to be completely confident and competent and feeling that they've got this, that they can manage all of these skin conditions themselves. So I'm creating some foundational educational materials at the moment where I'm just going to deal with the three main ones that are in the waiting room, and they are eczema, psoriasis, and acne.
Excellent.
I can safely say that because I've been working in that space for a long time, that they're the three most common ones. I'm running a free webinar in a couple of days, which is mostly on differential diagnosis, actually, between psoriasis and eczema and seborrheic dermatitis, because they're three rashes that all can look very similar depending on the part of the body that you're looking at, and often get misconstrued for one another.
Yeah.
And then I'm going to build out a whole lot of other deep dive modules into specific zones and areas like infectious skin conditions, endocrine skin conditions, autoimmune skin conditions. And yeah, that's what's to come.
Amazing. What does it feel like having been a practitioner who has done so many things in your first decade, seeing behind the scenes, front of the scenes, associations, guidelines, all sorts of stuff, and then this last decade diving deep into teaching and seeing literally thousands of clients with skin conditions? What does it feel like when you're able to shift something for a client who basically was just given cortisone creams and promise that they are going to be on it forever.
It's actually really life-changing work, and that's what I say to all the other naturopaths who that they want to avoid it. I think it's some of the most satisfying, rewarding clinical work that I've ever done, because it's, first of all, it's completely visible. You've either done the job or you haven't. It's super clear. Yeah, the results are obvious, and it's obvious to your patients and it's obvious to you. But more so, just the peace of mind as patients now have, because the torturous thoughts, the social isolation, even the prejudice. A lot of people with skin conditions deal with prejudice. I was reading a paper once that people with acne are in job interview situations are prejudiced against in the job selection process. There's a bias against them. It's just, it leaks into all parts of life, dating, relationships, and that's a big impact. That's a really big impact for a skin condition to have. And if you can make that kind of difference in people's lives, the ripple effect is huge.
I love that. I love that. And I love that you're in this work. And I love that you're sharing it. So many practitioners who have this type of level of experience keep it all to themselves and just see clients back to back, and everyone knows them as the clinician to go to for that kind of stuff, but don't actually share their wisdom. And I'm so grateful that you are putting it out there and helping the profession on even a bigger scale. I have loved chatting to you today, Rebecca. Thank you so much for your time.
You're welcome. I really enjoyed it too. Thanks for having me be present to all the things I've done and accomplished in my
No, thank you
career.
for doing them and being them. If people want to connect with you, can you just give us your website address and you can go and check out all of the trainings that Rebecca's got there?
Yeah, my website address is rebeccahughes.com.au and my Instagram handle is Natural Skin Medicine.
Fantastic. And you'll see the links below. Thanks again, Rebecca.
Thank you.